content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Joanna LaForgia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Southern Living. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the April 2026 issue of Southern Living magazine. The cover of this magazine has a watermelon pink tone, or strawberry. Well, actually, strawberry. More, it's a bit of a light red or a dark pink. So, cross between the background's a watermelon pink color, and the foreground there's a glass pedestal cake plate with a strawberry lemonade jelly mold sitting upon it. It's more thoroughly the cover described in our last episode. But from the top to bottom, the magazine cover reads Southern Living. And that's in green print. And special anniversary issue is in green print. In white print, the rest reads 60 years. And the South's best. New hotels, barbecue joints, beach towns, restaurants, and more. Our most iconic recipes, and the next great food city, Ivy Odom's favorite cake, and the church that changed the world, which we covered last episode. And today, we'll take a look at the Grumpy Gardener, visit the Grumpy Gardener. That's a regular feature in the magazine. He's usually good for some mild or heavy entertainment. And then later, we will take a look at some recipes. Best in class, 12 standout favorites from 60 delicious years of Southern Living. All right. This is in the at-home section of the magazine. Magazine's divided into the South, at home, the kitchen, and in season. All right, in the at-home section, the Grumpy Gardener. We have a couple of cartoons that start out. One has a caricature of Grumpy in brown overalls and an orange checked shirt, sitting at a wooden ladder-backed chair. With his hat, wide-brimmed hat, well, not too wide, but a brimmed hat that's hanging over the corner, one corner of the chair. He's at his laptop. He's looking a little disgruntled. He's got a cup of coffee before him on the table, and in the background there's a hanging plant and a large palm that's growing from somewhere beneath the table. And there's a window behind him, and we can see some green tree out that window and some green hedges at the bottom of the window. And it's open, and there's an orange squirrel sitting on the windowsill, half inside Grumpy's office, smiling at him. And then at the bottom, there is a cartoon of a woman. These are a middle-aged couple. The woman is pouring some coffee grinds in her garden, and there are tomato plants, and she has a green bib apron on. She's wearing green trousers and some brown gardening boots. She has a white long-sleeve shirt on and a very wide-brimmed hat on, brown hair in a bun, pointy nose. We see her from the profile. And she is looking at her husband, who's running down a green hill toward her with a newspaper. And on the newspaper, the headline is, "Recent Earthquakes Caused by Caffeine." He has his robe on. He's running out in his robe, white beard, his glasses, white beard and white hair, kind of a long nose, bulbous nose, a blue plaid full-length robe over some light blue pajama trousers. And there's a dog sitting beside the woman, who's also looking at this newspaper as it's barreling toward him. The dog is white with some brown markings and brown ears, looks like a beagle, and a blue bandana around its neck. And the caption of this cartoon is, "Edna, are you quite mad? No more coffee grounds." Okay. Recent earthquakes caused by caffeine was the heading of the newspaper. All right. Well, we'll start. Dear Grumpy, here's the first letter. In Northern Virginia, our typical soil is red clay. For years, I've been spreading coffee grounds in our garden on the premise that it helps break up and improve the soil. Well, my wonderful son and his wife, who are avid gardeners, recently moved back here from San Diego, California, and reject my strategy. They say that they don't want a bunch of caffeinated worms in their yard. My question to you, Grumpy, is who stands on the better ground here? And this is signed Jim. I gave him a prim voice, but that's Jim. Okay. Oh, and this is listeners by Steve Bender. That is who the Grumpy Gardener is. And his response is, "You do, Jimbo. Coffee grounds, especially composted ones, are great for the soil and make a good source of organic matter. Unless you pile them 3 feet thick, don't worry about the caffeine. Most of that goes into the glorious liquid you drink. That's lucky, as the last thing you need is twitchy soil that won't stay still." All right. Next, hasta la vista. Are there any hostas that will tolerate the heat in a shade garden in North Florida? Signed, Amy. Response is, life is short for most hostas in your USDA zone, which is Zone 9A. They need a longer, colder winter than what North Florida provides. Fortunately, there are still a number of heat-tolerant ones available for folks in the Deep South. As a bonus, they have showy flowers thanks to their parentage from fragrant plantain lily, or hosta plantaginia is the Latin name. And that fragrant plantain lily is native to warmer parts of China. Grumpy recommends cathedral windows. These are the species of hostas, listener. Cathedral windows, fragrant bouquet, guacamole, royal standard, stained glass, honey bells, and Old Faithful. A good online source for them, excuse me, is plantdelights.com. plantdelights.com. Next letter. Go for it. I'm trying to transplant a rose bush and its roots have gone under the sidewalk. Will it survive if I cut the roots? And the response is, well, there's only one way to find out. And that is the total succinct response from Grumpy. The next letter, keeping it together. I live close to Hagerstown, Maryland, and I have a red bud tree that split down the middle during a storm. Both sides are still alive. Is there a way to secure these halves so that they'll grow together as one trunk? Absolutely. If the tree is small, pull together the halves so that the bark on each side meets that of the other. Then wrap the affected section of the trunk with grafting tape. You can get this from Amazon. If the halves are too large and heavy for tape alone, pull them together, drill a hole through them, insert a screw with washers at each end, securing them with nuts, basically, and then wrap the area. I did this some years ago with a split Japanese maple. It healed so well you can't see the scar. Interesting. Balcony plants. Hi, Grumpy. We live in an apartment in downtown Greenville, South Carolina. Our double balcony gets full sun on both sides. What trailing plants for pots and hanging baskets can you recommend? Signed, Oma. You have lots of options to choose from. Take a look at lantana, sweet potato vine, variegated ivy, fan flower, calabracha, or calabracho. I'm going to spell that, listeners. It's C-A-L-I-B-R-A-C-H-O-A. Silver Falls dichondra, cascade ivy geranium, licorice plant, homestead purple verbena, and trailing petunia, sun coleus, angelonia, and periwinkle. Quite a good list, if I do say so myself. And next is Murder, She Wrote. How do I trim an amandina? My neighbor murders hers like she does her crepe myrtle. Oh, my heavens. Why must some gardeners resort to such unspeakable cruelty? Thank you for opting out. Nandina consists of multiple woody stalks growing upright from the base. Use pruning shears or loppers, never hedge trimmers, to shorten them to slightly different heights to avoid a flat top. If you can, cut back each to just above a leaf. Otherwise, prune it back to the height that you desire and then let the stalk leaf out from there. Rose Hope. Many of the knockout roses in our area are dying from the rose rosette disease. Are there any shrub types that are resistant? Rose rosette is a terrible viral disease that's spread by tiny mites. It causes clusters of bright red shoots and distorted flowers on bushes like knockout. Infected plants will slowly die. However, a new shrub rose called Top Gun shows surprising resistance to rosette and other diseases. Growing 3 to 4 feet tall and wide, it features deep red flowers with bright yellow stamens from spring into fall. No doubt other colors are in the offing. Keep an eye out for them at your local nursery. And finally, the last letter is pruning lilacs. When should I prune my lilac bushes? After 7 years, I finally had wonderful blooms this spring and don't want to mess that up. Lilacs and other spring flowering shrubs bloom on growth made the previous year. So, the best time to prune is right after they finish their seasonal show. This gives them plenty of time to make new buds for next year. If you trim them in fall or winter, you'll cut off the buds and mess up royally. And listeners, this column of Grumpy's always ends with a quick Grumpy's Gripe of the Month. Too many people wait for the fall to show Japanese maples some love. They're oblivious to the fact that spring's colors can match autumn's and even outshine them. Newborn leaves in the crisp April air offer shades of crimson, orange, pink, and gold. These hues are more dependable than those in the fall and last longer, too. And have you ever noticed the vernal flowers? My Osakazuki Japanese maple marries fresh mint green leaves with sprays of tiny red blossoms. So open your eyes, people. Japanese maples aren't just for autumn. That's his gripe of the month. And now, listeners, on to our standout recipes some knockout recipes we've got here. This is Southern Living's Best in Class, 12 standout favorites from 60 delicious years of Southern Living. And we have them pictured here we have all 12 pictured in small squares on one full page here, listeners. But I'll wait until we talk about them to describe the photos to you. And this is written by Josh Miller. In a locked room down a long hallway at our home office in Birmingham, a treasure trove of Southern history lies stacked in silence. We call them the Red Books, thick, leather-bound volumes of every issue of the magazine, with the years of their births embossed on the spines in gold. A careful flip through their crumbling pages is like stepping back into the past. There are sherbets and aspics aplenty, pound cakes and green beans galore. And while some might not be in your weekly rotation, like the candied ham loaf from our first issue in 1966, a generous helping of them has stood the test of time. It's impossible to choose the best. Instead, we're celebrating 12 recipes that became instant classics upon publication. We think you'll agree that each of these icons, from cheeky to cherished, deserves a spot in our Hall of Fame. Most dramatic. Okay, they each got to have a prize here, listeners. The most dramatic is a potato salad, and it is pictured in a photo. Looks like red new potatoes, onions, pickles, and garnished with dill. So it's sitting upon a pink plate, a blush pink plate. And this is what it is. No dish is more likely to start a fight at a cookout than potato salad. Opinions can be strong and feuds abound. Hot versus cold, mustard versus mayonnaise, smooth versus chunky, eggs versus olives. Just beware of adding something really wacky like raisins, or you'll be put on potluck probation and demoted to plate and napkin duty. And listeners, they don't all have detailed recipes. The big standouts do, but it is red potatoes. I can't tell whether they don't seem to have mayonnaise on this, although it is the South. I would guess that they do, but it's not visible. What is visible are the red potatoes, the red onions, mostly red potatoes, and pickles, dill pickle chips, and other pickles that are sliced. Oh, that could be okra. Could be okra. Cut up. Yes. Might be. It's hard to discern, listeners. But it is garnished with dill. Small, chopped dill. All right, next. Cutest couple. Pepper jelly and cream cheese. This is on an oval plate, listeners. And in the background is some punch. A rosy apple-colored punch, red apple-colored punch, and the cream cheese is a block of cream cheese sitting there with this red that matches the red punch. It's like a fire engine red jelly dripping over it. And it is garnished. They appear to be mint leaves. And there are some Ritz crackers that it's being served with. Cutest couple, pepper jelly and cream cheese. From showers to tailgates to funerals, these two lovebirds are inseparable. On their own, they don't stand out from the crowd all that much. But paired up, they're the South's most desired duo. A little bit country and a little bit rock and roll. most popular is a $1 million pound cake. And this, listeners, is sitting on a round green plate. It is a pine green or Kelly green. And the pound cake is cut up, but it's a ring. So it's a circle here. $1 million pound cake. Former Southern Living editors and test kitchen professionals just can't quit talking about this five-star cake. And neither can our longtime readers. Ever since it debuted in the magazine in 1978, folks have been making it on repeat and absolutely raving about it. Best nicknames. That is from Chocolate Delight. Some call it Girdle Buster or Husband's Delight, and others make variations known as Jimmy Carter Cake or Better Than Robert Redford Dessert. No matter what you refer to it as, this layered treat of whipped topping, pudding, cream cheese, and a crumbly crust is a true regional gem. And that, listeners, is sitting on a purple plate. And it's like the color of a dark lilac plate. And there are layers, that you can see. There's a cut-up square, and there's a crumbly crust. It appears to be graham crackers. They don't say here. And the cream cheese and pudding and the whipped topping on top. And then it's got, on top of the whipped topping, there are chocolate chips, just a few scattered chocolate chips, and some scattered chopped nuts of some sort. Most controversial, sweet tea with baking soda. Two tall glasses here, listeners, of sweet tea with a lemon slice, a full round of lemon slice in one, and what appears to be a lime slice in another, and it's filled with ice cubes as well, these two glasses, and they're sitting on sky blue napkins and on a lighter sky blue tablecloth. Sweet tea with baking soda. When contributing editor Sherry Castle revealed that the secret to crystal clear sweet tea was a teaspoon of baking soda, some Southern Living readers clutched their pearls in disbelief. But after just one sip, many naysayers changed their tune. And now, listeners, we get to the life of the party. And this, listeners, is the strawberry lemonade jelly mold that is on the cover of this magazine. It's on a glass pedestal plate, cake plate, or a plexiglass, appears to be, might be crystal even. And it's sitting on a watermelon pink tablecloth, and background is a blurred watermelon pink with some white diamonds that might be suggestive of a strawberry pattern in the background that it's blurred. And on the plate is, of course, our jelly mold. And it's filled with some fruits, some strawberries and lemons. There is strawberries and lemons atop it and on the cake plate beside it. Strawberry lemonade jelly mold. She wiggles and she jiggles. She's got more dance moves than a Southern wedding reception. When somebody walks through the door with a glistening, fruit-studded gelatin, you know a good time's about to be had. And here's the recipe, listeners. The active time is 25 minutes, and that's also the total time, plus 8 hours of chilling. And it serves six. Coat a 5 to 6 cup bundt pan with cooking spray. Add 3 cups sliced strawberries to the pan in an even layer. Set aside. Whisk together 1 3-ounce package each of strawberry and lemon-flavored gelatins in a large heat-proof bowl. Gradually add 1 1/4 cups of boiling water to gelatin mixture, whisking until dissolved, about 2 minutes. Stir in 1 1/4 cups lemon lime soft drink. Let stand until foam dissipates, about 10 minutes. Gradually pour gelatin mixture over strawberries in pan. Chill, uncovered, until set, at least 8 hours. To unmold, dip bottom of pan in a bowl of hot water for 10 seconds. Place a plate upside down over the pan. Holding plate and pan together firmly, invert slowly and remove pan. Garnish with strawberries, mint leaves, and lemon slices. And listeners, since we're short on time, I'm just going to read the titles of the rest. But first, to tell you where to find the recipes that we haven't read, you can go to T as in Thomas, Q as in Queen, R as in Robert, dot B as in boy, Z as in zebra. Southern Living. Or you can Google Southern Living, best in class. Okay, most iconic, hummingbird cake. The best dressed, pear salad. The most spirited is the bushwhacker. These are exported from St. Thomas drinks. They were exported to the Florida Panhandle. Boozy adults only milkshake. Brandy, basically Brandy Alexander. Perfect attendance. Deviled eggs. Best hair. Lemon meringue pie. And most presidential, Rosalind Carter's pimento cheese. That's our time for today's episode of Southern Living. I'm so glad you joined us and hope you'll join next time. I'm Joanna LaForgia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Southern Living is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. So long till next time.